Hello, everybody. This is Ray Sidney Smith for Productivity Book Group, and this is Productivity Book Group's author interview series, which brings discussion participants, readers, and listeners in contact with new and interesting productivity books and authors. I'll be interviewing authors that we have read or will be reading here on Productivity Book Group, as well as other authors I find worth sharing with you all, like today. These podcast interviews are injected between our normal discussion format episodes that are published here on Productivity Book Group. I'm excited to talk today with Frances Wade, author of two productivity books, Perfect Time-Based Productivity and Bill's I Am Perfect Time Management Adventure, alumnus of the AT&T Bell Labs, 20-plus year entrepreneur, newspaper columnist, recovering triathlete, avid reader, and lover of all things personal improvement. Welcome to Productivity Book Group, Frances.
Thanks, Ray. It's a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
Was there anything I missed in my introduction of you? I know you do so much more with your work at Two Time Labs, your blog, your mastermind groups. Tell us a bit about yourself and Two Time Labs.
It sort of is explained by my accent in a way. So I have a very Jamaican accent, but I actually was born in Cape Cod. I moved to live in Jamaica when I was 1 year old. Stayed there until I went to college at Cornell. Spent 4 years there, worked for AT&T Bell Labs right after, started my own company, moved back to Jamaica in 2005, and then I'm actually living in Trinidad at the moment. And what gave the inspiration for the book happens to be all of the changes I made from one culture to the next. And the biggest one, the sort of the big inspiration came when I moved to Jamaica in 2005 from living in the U.S., and discovered that my productivity techniques weren't good enough to deal with an environment that was more hectic than what I was used to. So the fact that I've jumped around from country to country has made me question a lot of things, question myself, made me go back to basic research, academic research, to find out what are some of the answers that don't just apply to me when I'm living in, for example, in New Jersey, but are answers that I could use anywhere in the world. So that sort of explains it, huh?
Yeah, fantastic. That's great. You know, your bio reads very colorfully about your sort of moving from country and state to state and so on and so forth. And it's really quite interesting to hear everyone's sort of personal history and story. So briefly for the audience listening who haven't yet read your book and hopefully will or books, who is the audience for which Perfect Time-Based Productivity is written? And can you describe sort of your ideal reader or perhaps who it might be most helpful to and why?
Sure. While anyone can pick it up and get value from it, I really am targeting the person who has already done a time management program of some kind. So someone who's looking for a deeper think, someone who's willing to go past, you know, the regular blog posts that you see with top 10 tips and tricks. Someone who has thought about what they need to do to improve the way they manage their time and to be more productive and are looking towards greater improvement. Because the book starts out with an argument or just an assumption, a hypothesis that we already have a time management system when we enter adulthood. So we already have a way of managing what I call time demands, which are just self-generated tasks. And we teach ourselves these methods. Enter our 20s, and it used to be that what we taught ourselves going into our 20s used to last a lifetime. But because of the information overload that we face, the devices that we carry, 24/7 availability, all of these factors conspire to overwhelm our systems that we taught ourselves in our teens and adolescence. So you and I aren't as fortunate as our grandparents, because what they taught themselves could last a lifetime, but we need to reinvent ourselves every few years, unfortunately. So I wrote the book for someone who has already gotten past I need to have a to-do list kind of thinking. So what do I do if the number of time demands just keeps increasing? What if it gets past that point where, you know, the average 25-year-old would say, you know, I'm sort of struggling at this point. If I want to get promoted to and move to the next level and have a child and have a home and if I want to grow in my life, I would expect the number of time demands to increase. But how do I cope? So I wrote the book to answer the question, how do you cope with an increase in time demands for everyone, but mostly for the person who has already gotten past that initial sort of step?
Yeah, I like the way in which you opened the book, and it's correlative to me to Dr. Stephen Covey's position on, you know, children are all born geniuses. You know, they're all born with this innate, you know, innate set of skills. And I do believe that in some way, shape, or form, not necessarily born with those skills, but we are all by culture taught ways in which to deal with what you call time demands. And by the time we sort of leave the roost, we have these time demands, and perhaps very similar to in psychotherapeutic counseling, people talk about having sort of, you know, a current set of skills that helped you in one particular age, but no longer help you in this particular age. So our coping mechanisms change from, you know, sort of stage in our life to stage in our life. And it seems to me here you're talking that time demands need to be dealt with differently as we sort of progress throughout the various stages of our lives.
Exactly, exactly. Most people hit sort of a bump when they enter college. They are forced to either adapt or drop out.
Yeah, because mom isn't doing your laundry and dad isn't cracking the whip.
Right, all of a sudden you're the one who has to deal with this huge increase in time demands. And if you don't adapt quickly, in other words, if you don't teach yourself the next set of skills that you need to master, then unfortunately lots of people, there's a lot of studies that show that grades correlate with time management skills. But for the most part, I read a study actually where Harvard Business Review article. They studied students doing their MBAs, and they said, you know, time management is so important, but we leave it up to our students to kind of teach themselves, don't we? And that's true for college. It's true for high school. As important as these skills are, we sort of leave it up to the individual to teach themselves. And, you know, good luck if you do. Too bad if you don't. Yeah, kind of sad.
No, it is absolutely sad, and it's one of my great missions in life is to help people, especially as you're coming up in life, know how to graduate, you know, with a set of productivity skills, with a sort of personal management skills, right, that will take you into a life of fulfillment, not just of floundering
and survival.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So the book has four fundamental steps that you sort of take people through in the various parts of the book. For the sake of those listening, let's just go through them. So you have here step one, which is, and I'm quoting from your material: evaluate your current skills against best in class standards, discovering strengths and improvement opportunities. Step two: set realistic targets for new behaviors in line with your goals and commitments. Step three, create a plan for new targets that allow you enough time to succeed, taking small steps. I really like that. Step four, set up a habit change support environment. So tell us a little bit about your reasoning and perhaps how you came up with the steps and what the main premise of the steps in sort of, you know, in a cohesive fashion, how they sort of work with one another a little bit.
I discovered them because I taught a time management program in the late 90s, early 2000s. So my mother took this program, and after the program, I asked her, well, how was it? She said, well, I don't need any of that stuff. I was so hurt. I couldn't figure out why she didn't need what I was offering in that program. And what I learned many years later, after doing a little bit of research, but looking at my own example, is that when people pick up a book or a program, they actually follow these steps. So all the way from GTD to Covey to any of the other improvement programs or training or books, people actually follow these steps. Although the books are written as if you should just follow the habits that they lay out. Because most training is developed along the lines of, here's what you need to do it. Most books are written, here's what I do, follow me. Mm-hmm. My point of view is that what we actually do when we pick up a book or take a program is that the first thing we do is we evaluate. So we measure ourselves against what the book is telling us to do. And we say, I do this part, that part, and the other part. I don't do this, I don't do that. I should probably focus on this, and maybe I should focus on that. I don't think this part over here makes sense. So in other words, we evaluate what we are currently doing against what the book or the best practices tell us to do. And what I did was I took all the books that I could find, got as far as I could get with each of them. But then I had to go dig up a whole bunch of academic research. And I read over 400 or 500 academic papers in order to find out what the sort of the truth was behind many of the suggestions that I was reading in books, you know, sort of where did they come from. So the evaluations that I have in my book aren't based on other books. They're actually based on research in psychology, in philosophy, in adult learning, in a bunch of different sub-specialties that usually aren't brought together in any way, shape, or form. But I brought them together in the book because time management isn't actually an academic discipline. So I had to go and do all of this hard work in order to build these best practices. So the evaluation results in a profile. And it's not a trivial evaluation like the kind that you could do with, you know, answer these five questions and, you know, it pops out with an answer at the end and says, you're great. It's not one of those. I have to actually do a bunch of teaching so the person can do an accurate evaluation. So they need to learn a bunch of concepts, such as the idea that they already have a system. That's one of the core concepts. And this is a matter of figuring out what's already there. So once you do the profile and you have an idea of what the best-in-class practice looks like, then instead of jumping into trying to change everything all at once, I take people through a series of steps where they set first one target per skill. So people read a book and or take a program and walk away with 40 things they should do differently. Something happens in their life the following week and they immediately revert to what they used to do before they read the book. Very sad, but the reason is they're trying to do too much. They set too many targets. So what I ask the reader to do is to set a limited number of targets, a very small number. And that's where the targets come from. So the person might say, I need to change these following four behaviors. Then in the next step, I show them that trying to change all those four behaviors at the same time is a recipe for disaster. You cannot change a lot of ingrained habits that you've been practicing for 20 years all at the same time. In fact, there's a lot of research now that says that just changing one habit is, as you know, is really difficult.
Absolutely.
So you actually need to take these habits, break them down into steps, and create a plan that looks like something more like a year and a half to 2 years, depending on the person. Something in which will allow you to focus on one or two habits per month.
You touch on a lot of different things. You know, you touch on the some of the issues that I can frequently, you know, people, you know, I'm a huge GTD enthusiast. And, I talk about it all the time. And people always say, you know, I want to create a GTD system. And I always have to say to them, no, you're utilizing GTD methodologies, but you're implementing your own system, you know. And,
hold on. You don't want them to fail, right? You want them to succeed. If someone isn't there to tell them, hold your horses, just take them one at a time, get them to the level that you need to get them to, and then move on to the next. Kind of be organic and gentle with yourself, no?
Right. And David Allen has himself said, you know, it takes 3 years, you know, minimum to implement GTD fully. You know,
right.
you're absolutely right. You know, people need to invest in changing this, you know, it's changing sometimes your core, you know, how you've really dealt with these things for a very long time.
Exactly. And it just doesn't happen quickly. And I try to overwhelm the reader with reasons as to why they need to follow this slow approach. But but I know people hear 3 years and they're like, forget it. Like, you got to be out of your crazy mind. They don't want to hear the 3 years. But that, unfortunately, is the way to make it work. So once you have a plan for changing habits slowly and gradually over time, then you need a support system because, again, this is kind of an unpopular message. You're bad. We're bad at changing habits. We suck. Uh-huh. We overestimate our willpower. We underestimate the effect of our external environment. We underestimate the effect of other people. We're terrible. You know, the research is flaky as well. It's not very advanced compared to other aspects of human life. This part of human life is not very well understood. It's still very much emerging. So I tell people, listen, you need to create a system that will guarantee that you won't fail. You need a backup system in case your first system fails because you're not to be trusted. That's not a popular message. You're not to be trusted. You need lots and lots of, if not support, then you need a push. You need a coach, maybe. You need a set of triggers to remind you every morning what to do. You need a checklist to follow every day. You need And I say, you need, and the thing is, you can't copy what I do and you can't copy what Ray does. You need to figure out your own sort of criminal behavior. You know, where do you cut corners and where do you try to take inappropriate shortcuts? And you use that information to craft your habit change support system. So ETAPS, evaluate, target, plan, and support are the four steps that actually even someone who reads any other improvement book around time management, I think they should use the same four steps because they're the difference between succeeding and failing.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, I'm a huge fan of you know, accountability.
I led a program last week for an innovation group in a company, and I told them that their best form of support is each other. So that's when the big boss sort of jumped up and said, okay, everybody's going to improve by one step in the next year. Okay, that would work.
There you go.
You're absolutely right.
I want to jump ahead sort of and just talk about this, and then we can sort of close up our discussion. Tell us a little bit about this process that people go through as they're sort of dealing with time demands.
Sure. When a time demand is created, so it's a psychological creation, what they call a psychological object. It gets created in your mind, and you have a choice at that moment. Where do you store it? So when you're 11, 12, and 13, you store it in your mind, right? You just use your memory because you don't have that many time demands to remember. So you use your memory. And then at some point, those who experience a greater number teach themselves how to go from using memory, which is unreliable, to using a list of some kind. So people often make the transition from using memory to using a list. Maybe at some point in their late teens or while they're at college or in their early 20s. Now, I've met grown adults who still use their memory only. So that's not a hard and fast rule, but people tend to improve and go to using lists. But anyway, they start off using creating them in their mind, and they put them in what's called capture points. So a time demand is created in the mind, and it falls into a capture point. And the first one is memory. That's the first one that we teach ourselves to use. Of course, there are others. You could use an email inbox at some point. You could use a paper pad. You could use a digital voice recorder. But in any case, a time demand gets captured. And the reason it gets captured is for later use. So when later actually takes place, we do what I call emptying. And emptying is perhaps the most difficult of the seven fundamentals. When we empty, we actually have one of five choices. And that's the point at which we make a decision about what do I do with this particular time demand? And we have five choices. We can either toss, which basically means void or delete it. We could add it to a list, in what I call listing. Add it to a schedule, what I call scheduling. We could save some important information related to that time demand, such as an email address or a phone number. Or we could act on it immediately, which is what I call acting now. So I describe this sequence of seven actions as the fundamentals because I say there's really no escaping these seven actions, these seven habits or practices. We'll always do them as long as we have an interest in managing time demands. We'll do them either badly or well. All the books that I've read talk about variations of the seven practices, but they appear to be comprehensive in that they cover all the seven essential activities we use to manage these psychological objects I call time demands. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. So I wanted to talk about some of the things that are in the book, both in the digital version and I think in the physical book, which are these sort of worksheets and sort of self-diagnoses, self-analyses tools that you've created for people to sort of work themselves through, and then finally sort of what people walk away with when they leave the book. Can you talk a little bit about those working pieces of the book? Because I think those are really valuable for people to understand that they're not just reading, but they're actually working along with these materials.
Right. What I tried to do was to take one day of training and convert it into a book. So there are 11 forms to fill out for each of the fundamental skills that we do to manage time demands or manage our management of time demands. A little bit meta, but 11 fundamental skills, and each of them is a sort of a self-evaluation form. You basically learn how to do the evaluation by understanding the underlying skill. That takes a little bit of time because You can't give the evaluation form to someone who doesn't understand the skill. You do the entire evaluation, come up with a profile that you sort of put on one piece of paper. You follow the forms and it says, okay, here's the shape of my current skills. And here's where your intelligence really is required. The question is, which skill do I want to improve first, second, third? In other words, what's the sequence I need to improve? And here there's a huge Pareto effect. Most of us, 20% of the improvements would produce 80% of the results. But no one can tell you which of the skills you need to improve first. You need to figure that out. So in the book, I try to help people figure out how to sequence their improvements, and I give them forms for laying out their plan over time. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's fantastic.
It's all so, the forms that I could think of, I took from the course and put right in the book and said, I really want you to use this because I think it'll help.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So I always like to ask authors of productivity books, especially or personal improvement books, what's one book from another author or another author that's influenced you and that you would recommend to others?
I'm a fan of a new book that's out that I actually haven't even read yet. It's Cal Newport's book, Deep Work.
Deep Work, yes.
Yeah, I haven't read it. It's on my list, but I've read all of his blogs up until January or February, and I've followed his work for a long time, corresponded with him by email. And he talks about what it takes to be in the flow state, which is something I mentioned in my book, coming from Mihai, Csikszentmihalyi's work called Flow.
Yes.
So Kyle's book focuses on one aspect of what I call flowing, which he distinguishes as sort of deep, creative, academic work. Very, very difficult work, challenging work, not necessarily being in the flow state to do something easy, but do something really hard. So I'm looking forward to reading that book, and I really recommend it because our world is not constructed to allow us to do deep work or to be in the flow state. It's constructed to have us watch advertisements and go immediately use our credit card on the Amazon website and buy something right now. So this is a real counterculture book that I think is really important.
Right, absolutely. You know, it always reminds me whenever people talk about sort of impulsive behavior in especially the productivity environment, I always think about sort of the practice of if you are find yourself on fire, you know, you stop, drop, and roll. and it's like, it's that same concept to me, you know, you just stop, take a deep breath, you know, and look and listen, that kind of thing, so that you are sort of pausing and planning as opposed to reacting in sort of that fight or flight response that we tend to be in.
Right, right. That's exactly right. It takes us, this kind of thinking about our time management system takes us out of that firefighting mode and really puts us sort of in the driver's seat for the first time, right? As adults.
Absolutely. 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 So in closing, how can people learn more about you, Francis, and keep up to date with your happenings?
Well, I have a heck of a stream on Twitter that has all sorts of tweets. I only really tweet out on time management alone. It's at FWADE. Or they can visit my website, which is http://perfect.mytimedesign.com. And I've also recently, just since January, been very active on Quora.com. That's Quora.com. And I've been basically excerpting chapters of the book in my answers, which is a lot of fun. Very interesting.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for being here on Productivity Book Group's author interview series, Francis. This has been great.
It's my pleasure. Anytime.
Wonderful. That was Francis Wade, author of The Perfect Time-Based Productivity and Bill's I Am Perfect Time Management Adventure for Productivity Book Group's author interview series. Just a couple of quick announcements. Our next Productivity Book Group reading discussion will be on Better Than Before, Mastering the Habits of Our Everyday Lives by Gretchen Rubin. That live discussion call will take place on March 26th, 2016 at noon Eastern. Full details are available at productivitybookgroup.org by clicking on Upcoming Books. If you haven't heard prior episodes, we have the Financial Productivity Challenge currently running. So if you're interested in getting financially fit this year, please head over to Productivity Book Group's website and click on the Financial Productivity Challenge link for full details. Finally, all podcast episodes are archived at productivitybookgroup.org under episodes. So if you missed a call and want to review it, feel free to head over there. Thanks for listening to this episode of Productivity Book Group Author Interview Series. I'm Ray Sidney Smith. Here's to your productive life. Take care.